Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mastering your emotions so you can be a safe space for the feminine is actually, to me, the art of masculinity.
So I would think it means two things to me. One, it's always like in the eye of the beholder. So realize that it's okay to have a different view than somebody else. Two, it's always being created and recreated.
I think it means an openness to growth, an openness to learning, an openness to looking at what is masculinity to me and having curiosity about what parts are serving me and what parts maybe aren't serving me so well anymore.
And so the art of masculinity is truly that. If you can master being a lion and a lamb, you've mastered masculinity.
The art of masculinity to me means knowing how to gracefully dance between both the feminine flow and the structure of the masculine.
This is The Art of Masculinity with your host, Johnny L. Sasser.
Hey everyone, today's episode is with Rick DeJesus. He is the founder and lead vocalist of Adelita's Way, an independent American hard rock band formed in Las Vegas in 2006. Man, he has been around for about 15 years in the game of music, and it is such amazing, amazing music they have put together through conscious lyrics, but also amazing musicians and talented to back that up. So this episode was really fun, and what I really gained from it was the fact that, you know, doing the right thing is not always easy. And those, especially in that celebrity realm or in the music industry, when you're looked at as an artist, doing the right thing goes against the grain. They want to have you do what it is that they want you to do and to not stray from that, or you don't get support. And I think that is a metaphor in life that we deal with today, with people getting canceled for saying the truth or just having an opinion in general. So it was a very powerful episode learning that and how that has shown up in Rick DeJesus's life. But not only that, how that's showing up in male role models today that we are focusing on in media, social media, and in the, you know, entertainment industry. So really powerful episode. Rick just absolutely crushes it. I enjoyed it with him. Such a great band and an honest human. So really appreciated everything that he brought to the community today. I know you guys are going to enjoy this as much as I did, and I'll see y'all around the corner.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to The Art of Masculinity. Today, we have Rick DeJesus on here. Perfect timing. We're getting close to Christmas time. So I love it. I love the last name. That's freaking awesome. If we're going Spanish, would it be of Jesus?
Of Jesus. And I'm a man of Jesus. Love me.
I love it, brother. You're also... you are just like, I'm really excited to have you on. I started listening to your guys' music a little bit getting into this episode, and man, I am blown away. You guys have such phenomenal music. It is absolutely astonishing. And it's very similar to what I grew up with listening to, like Taking Back Sunday and stuff like that. And you guys have been doing this for 15 years, and I had yet to have stumbled across you guys.
Well, I appreciate that. And we love new people finding out about us. And that's part of the game, right? It still excites us after 15 years to have new fans. And that's just part of what makes this amazing. You could be around for 15 years and somebody can just discover your music. So you got a lot of music to catch up on, man. We got like 7 albums out.
I know, bro. And I was listening to some of your top songs yesterday, and I was like, I loved all of them. I was like, these guys are dope. And Adelita's Way, it's like, you guys are literally the genre I was listening to growing up. So I was like, how did I not catch these guys anywhere out in California when I was like literally involved in that scene and constantly going to concerts and everything, man? It's wild, but here we are now. And I'm happy that I found you.
It's because we were one of the first bands to get canceled by the corporate scenery. Right? We were early cancelees, you know, before there was a whole movement. So we didn't comply with the music industry and the direction of it. And they exiled us from the scene pretty early on. But we were able to build a strong independent fan base. We've been independent for almost 8 years now. And we actually are larger now as an independent act than we were when we were signed to a major corporation. And we didn't comply with a lot of what you're seeing now. A lot of things that you're seeing now in media and in the music industry, they use propped up artists and propped up celebrities to push their narrative, to push what type of influence they want to have on generations. And we really didn't play ball at all. So we were early cancelees of the music industry. You know, we got exiled pretty quickly.
You guys are the OGs, bro. I love it. Well, we're going to, what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into what's called the manly round, because I want to get into that topic, because I read your op-ed as well. And it was a really, really well done article that you wrote. And the whole cancel culture, the whole basically like how they're using celebrities, how they're using musicians, how they're using artists in general to perpetuate very, you know, negative and toxic narratives. Like, I definitely want to get into this, because I think having somebody of your expertise being in that field for so long is going to be enlighten a lot of people. But let's get you through the manly round real quick. All right. The first question you got is, what is your spirit animal and why?
Spirit animal. It's got to be an eagle, because I'm a Philadelphia Eagle fan. I love freedom. I love to fly free. It's a connection I have with my father who passed away. We used to watch the Eagles together. So there's something within my soul with an eagle, because everything it stands for, from freedom to you know, having that connection with my father growing up over the football team. So I'm gonna say the eagle.
Oh, dude, they're beautiful too, and like, they're cerebral hunters. It's funny, because I was my mother-in-law has a house in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, which is like the center of Pennsylvania up north towards New York, and they call it the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon. And every time my wife and I are hiking and riding bikes back there, we see eagles all the time, dude. They're just beautiful, beautiful.
I love that, cerebral hunter. That's how I play my sports too. I'm very, very use this mind on my prey to get to, you know, to find out the weak spot, and then I get on my attack.
I love it. I love it. All right. So, this is going to be a good one, because you are a musician, you're a lead singer, so you can't pick any of your songs. So whenever a song comes on and you're out in public, so you're surrounded by millions of people, whenever this particular song comes on, which song is it that you have to start busting out and singing along to? Not just in your head, but you're like, man, you're actually voicing the words along with it.
Oh, it's got to be "This Is How We Do It." This is how we do it. You know, it's going, you know what I mean? Me and my wife play pickleball, and I always play that song when I walk up to the courts, because I'm like, it's the entrance music, right? I'm like, this is how we do it. Feel good vibe to it. I'm a rock guy, but you know, I can tell when a song gets me in some type of mood, you know.
I love that. I love that. That's a good one too, man. You can't help but sing to that one. You know, absolutely. All right, and your last question is, here's a fun one, because we did already talk about celebrities a little bit, but if you could prank any celebrity or well-known person, and you can go into the past too, so it doesn't have to be somebody present, but if you could prank anybody, who would it be? And if you know the prank, what would the prank be?
I would prank Ashton Kutcher for all the years of being told that I look like a version of him, right? Like, growing up my whole life, people were like, oh, you have this Ashton Kutcher vibe, right? So he had that show Punk'd. He was punking other people. I'd give him a taste of his own medicine, you know? And remember when he pranked Justin Timberlake with the IRS, where they were taking all his stuff, where he went to his mansion, and they were like bringing out his cars on lift beds. They were bringing his guitars out. I'd probably hit him with some form of back tax joke, you know, back tax prank. Yeah. You know, you gotta
pay. I love that. That's a really good one, man. Cause you kind of got, when you said that, I was like, oh shit, he does look like he could be Ashton Kutcher's brother. That's for sure. I was like, damn.
All I heard when I was younger, when I was a youth, you know, I think I've, I've grown, you know, I think the gray beard separates us now. I think his is still brown.
Oh, that's good though. Hey man, you could look like we're, that's for sure.
You know what? That's a compliment.
Yeah, exactly. Good looking dude, man. Well, hey brother, I want to jump in a little bit here because, you know, I did an intro before this episode kicked off. So everybody got to hear a little bit about you, but I want to hear from the horse's mouth, kind of what brought you into the music industry? What was your path to even get there? You say that you grew up playing baseball, your family was Puerto Rican. So like what really pushed you into the music trajectory? Because that's not typical for that type of family from what I've seen growing up.
Right, music's in your soul. And I wasn't sure of it either. I didn't know what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do when I grew up. But sometimes you get called to do something. And that's, I think that's reasons that I feel so passionately about using my voice to help people come together to promote faith in God and to do. There's got to be a reason that I've been put here, right? Like when I was younger, in my teens, late teens, music just started consuming me out of nowhere. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I know I couldn't stop obsessing over singing and writing songs. So writing songs was the first thing that I started doing. Before even having an idea of performing or any of these things, right? It was all about getting a pen and a pad and writing songs. And you know, I found out that I had a gift after I wrote three songs. I snuck into a bar as an underage kid and I played an open mic night in front of about 12 people. And after I played the open mic night, I was waiting for a beer bottle to get thrown at me. And instead I got a standing ovation. And people after the concert to take pictures with me, to sign autographs. It's the first autograph I ever signed in my life. And I want to say that God put me here because I had no idea this was going to be my path. But when I started feeling music consume me, it was in my late teens. I put blinders on. I dropped baseball. I stopped you know, focusing on anything except I had these blinders on to just start accomplishing my goals in the music industry and making, you know, making a statement and getting out there and trying to prove that I was one of the best songwriters that there was after putting in the work, right? You learn with time, anything that you do that you want to be great at, you got to put the work in. And I started at a young age as far as being in a band and I never looked back.
That's awesome. Was there any like resistance from your family? Cause especially I know like baseball is such a big thing in general for kids. And so especially coming from a Puerto Rican family where Puerto Rico is very good in baseball in general, was that something that caused any conflict when you were like, hey dad, I'm done with baseball. I'm going to go do this music thing.
My mom was very supportive. I think my dad was a little disappointed at first before he had, you know, he hadn't heard any of my songs. He hadn't really heard me sing or do anything. I just said, hey, I'm gonna be done with baseball. But there was a little bit of disappointment until he started watching me do music. Then he was like, okay, like he's too, you know. But baseball for me was something I was very dominant at as a youth all the way through to my last year of playing. I stopped playing when I was 20 years old. I had the best season of my life my last year. I put up career statistics. But there was a realization. I played at a Division I program, two of them. I went to Arizona State, and then I transferred to Temple University. And although I was a good player on those teams, I got to see where I stood. And I noticed there were players that were better than I was. I noticed that the likelihood of me being a top major league prospect were slimmer than I had previously thought. You know, I dreamed of being a pro baseball player, but once I got there up to a Division I collegiate level, I realized that I was just the middle of the pack, kind of more towards the rear of the pack as far as talent at that level. And you start having the realization that either you're going to start working even harder than you've been working, which I wasn't willing to do at that time because I had already shifted my focus to music, right? Like I'm going home at night and writing songs, and I'm sitting at first base thinking about lyrics at that point. I'm like not even focused on the, you take a line drive right in the face because I'm just like, ugh, you know, thinking about I'm the dude in the outfield chasing butterflies at that point writing melodies, and cannot be that if you're Division One baseball player, right? You've got to be like in the weight room. You've got to be dedicated. These pro athletes, what they do to put their bodies on the line is absolutely just, I don't even know the word to use. It's just intense. You know, you've got to be thinking about the sport all day, every day, from your diet to your workout to your rest to your recovery to your, you know, you've got to look at your time. You know, if you got an extra 15 minutes of the day, you're sitting and waiting for something, you better jump out of the car and start doing some squat thrusts or something if you want to be a pro athlete. You know, you there's no time wasted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but then you say that, and then I want to flip that on you and be like, Rick, you're a professional musician, bro. That ain't an easy lifestyle either. You're dedicated to this. You've been doing it for 15 years and you guys are an amazing band. So to like, what does that look like for you when you made that transition? You're like blood, sweat, and tears into the music scene. And so what was like that for you to then change that sense of dedication to being like, no, this is like every single day. When I'm awake, I'm writing. When I'm like practicing, I'm doing all this stuff. How was that transition for you?
Well, I took my college athlete mindset and I almost applied it to music, right? I did obsess over it. I did wake up first thing in the morning because, you know, you're most creative when you wake up in the morning first thing. If you wake up and you have a tea or you have a water, that's when your creativity is flowing the most. And I've learned to find the little details of having a clear mind to write songs. Yeah, I'm very intense about it, right? From my diet, it almost is like being a pro athlete, but as a singer. From my diet to the songwriting, to the touring, I take it very, very seriously, but it's almost effortless when you're this passionate about something, right? Like, and struggle getting in a van or getting in a bus or getting on a plane and traveling as much as we travel. There are people that's hard for them. And for me and my crew, it's very easy for us, right? We can do a 14-hour drive, load into a show, prepare, stretch, warm up, get our minds right, get our bodies right, and perform night in and night out. And it's almost very easy for us because we're so dedicated to being top musicians or being the best at what we do. So the days are grueling, they're very long, but the fans make it worth it. So every second of the day is dedicated towards making sure that the performance we put on each night is the best one that we've done yet. I still have that mindset. I'm 39 years old. I still think the next show is the best show. And I prepare my body and I prepare my mind and I prepare my voice like that's gonna happen. You know, I go out and I try to give on almost flawless performances because you can get off stage, you can assess what you could have done better. I still do that. I still get off stage and go, ah, man, I could have gave a little more energy in this section, or I could have put a little more into this note, or I could have did this. I could have played this song. You can always go back, evaluate, think about where you can improve. And after touring for 15 years, I can still do that night in and night out to motivate me to put on a better performance than I put on the night before.
Yeah, man. And that's like, you know, you talked about a professional athlete, but that's you have the same mindset, brother. You just put it in a different place and it shows up differently, but it's just as intense, man. I can see it in you too. I can see the passion in you when you speak about it. It's that fire's there, man. But I want to also ask you, because I really want to get into some of the things that we're seeing in today's society. But before we make that transition, I want to ask you, because of your experience and longevity in the music industry, what was maybe your guys's hardest time that you've been through as a lead singer of a band and obviously touring and balancing family lives and personal lives and trying to, you know, continually get fans? What's the biggest struggle that you can think of that you've gone through during this time in your life?
It's easy. I can hone in on a moment right now. You know, it during our third record, the record company wanted us to make a certain type of record. They were like, we want you to throw out your whole fan base that you've worked on. We want you to sound like this band. They wanted us to sound like other bands. Imagine Dragons was one that kept coming up over and over again. And I love that band. That's great. And I have a relationship with them a little bit too. But the record company essentially owed me a year's worth of wages. They weren't paying me them. They were withholding them from me. So I couldn't pay my bills. They weren't allowing me to work. It was a very, very abusive relationship. And they wanted me to deliver a certain type of record that was out of character for us. And they weren't going to give us the funds until we did this. So this drug on for about 8 months where I had to like borrow money from my parents. I was very depressed. I was very sad. Every time I would turn a song in, they would tell me it was garbage. And some of these songs ended up being hits for us, by the way, right? What I turned in and they said, oh, this is trash, and ended up being successful for us. So it was just, they're in the middle part of our career, later part of our career. That was when we really started diving into the finances and seeing how much they were taking advantage of us. And it was numerous people across the boards. You know, our whole team essentially was just kind of like siphoning money from us. So we were out there working 9-10 months out of the year. I'm away from my family. I'm away from my wife, and I'm coming home and I have nothing to show for it. I have no financial gain. I have no, you know, like the money was just going to everyone else. So these corporations, these managers, these music industry kind of like parasites, they find a way to get an artist like myself, like Taylor Swift, who obviously now generates so much income that some does trickle down to her, but they find a way to get you to go out, do all the work, 9-10 months of straight touring, of interviews, of being in the studio, of writing songs. And then the return doesn't come to you. It goes to everyone else. And you kind of sit at the bottom of the totem pole and you wait for it to trickle down to you. You're like, oh, can I get some, sir? You know, like you're in a position. And then beyond you, I'm a singer and who writes all the songs. So then imagine what that's like for the drummer and for the guitar player and for the bass player. They're like, oh my gosh, like, can I just pay my phone bill? You know, like, hey guys, 9 months out of the year, can I pay my phone bill? Like, it gets like that. And that was where, instead of just accepting that, once we got to look into the numbers and the finances or everything, that's where we put our foot down. And when I put my foot down and I said, enough's enough, we're done. I'm going on strike. I want out of all these contracts. I want to be done with this. You know, they try to crush you from that point. From that point, when you say you've had enough, they don't just say, oh, you know, you worked really hard for us for 6-7 years. Like, we'll let you go. Instead, they try to bury you. They try to ruin your career. They stop allowing you to tour with other artists. They try to crush you like an enemy. Now all these resources that you think are on your side are now going against you. So you're going against this huge man. You're going against this huge label. And their number one goal is to crush your dreams at this point and make sure that you don't come out the other side and get to tell your story. Well, we came out the other side. We have 7 million fans right now on Spotify alone. We've cracked the code. We're so blessed. We're one of the biggest independent bands in the world right now. We built this over the last 8-9 years. And now we get to tell our story. So, and now all the income comes to us. We're able to distribute it, out. I'm able to have a team of people that I take care of. And now I'm able to live a very blessed life. So I have no regrets. It's part of the experience. I learned from this all. Now I get to tell my story to other artists. We also get to pave the way for any artist that doesn't want to be in that, you know, almost abusive type relationship to where you're just out there, you know, kind of being a workhorse for somebody else's benefit.
Man. And so when we actually look at what's going on today, we look at the abuse of the psychology of humans in general by these corporations, by the media and stuff like that. How is that playing into these artists today? Are a lot of these people being like forced to almost be puppets because they'd rather do that than lose, like what you guys did, go back to the groundwork and have to start over?
Well, it just depends. I think the superstars make an agreement right off the top. You know, if the Billie Eilishes, the Taylor Swifts, right away, they sign the deal with the devil. They understand the assignment. And I think that they know that they've got to just comply. They know what they're there for. It's almost like a deal. Like, look, I'll make you the biggest artist in the world, but these are the things that I need you to do when the time comes. Sexualize young children. I need you to do that. And they accept that role, right? They're like, okay, I'm going to go for this. You know, it definitely is very Hollywood, the music industry. It's definitely very, very, look at who's leading the way. It's Viacom. It's the media companies. It's the major corporation of the record labels. It's Hollywood. What bands are the biggest? The ones that are getting the movie syncs, the ones that you're putting their songs in movies. Hollywood. Well, when they decide to hit the button on you and make you a huge star, you've got to comply. And if you don't comply, you find yourself out of the scene. You find yourself exiled. And it's real. And they utilize these artists to get people to vote the way they want, to get people to almost fall into a programmed state of mind, like, oh, Taylor Swift loves wearing a mask, I'm gonna wear a mask. You know, Taylor Swift's four times get four boosts because she says it's safe. You know, like people are starting to just ignore the results, and that's a problem, and ignore common sense. And you know, we want to sit here, and I'll just get into this real fast because I don't want to, you know, you get called a conspiracy theorist for everything nowadays, but I live in Maricopa County, and I watched election fraud happen here in Maricopa County. I seen it with my own eyes, and they've just made it like it's, you're just an election denier, a conspiracy theorist, but it's real. And just to dive into that real quick, you know, they've conditioned us to not use our common sense. They've conditioned us, you know, it's coming out about the masks, right? It comes out of, everyone trusts Fauci. They listen to everything he says. Well, the other day he just says, well, I have no proof that masks work, but I want you to put them on. And then people will put them on. So we want to think, the point of what I was saying is we want to think that it's all fraud and that these people don't have supporters, but they do have supporters. You know, this Biden administration actually has people out there that are voting for them and love these policies. Fauci actually has loyal supporters and followers. You know, Katie Hobbs, although she didn't campaign, didn't leave her basement once, didn't debate or anything. Has legions of supporters, and you've got to walk the line of just saying something is complete fraud and that no one voted for these people, and realize that some people have been programmed to you know, I guess stop using their common sense or the results. You know, like look at the vaccination, like the results speak for themselves. You get four vaccinations, you still get COVID. I know people that still got COVID pretty bad. And then what do? They move the goalposts. They say, well, if you get the vaccination, COVID will be a little less bad. It's constantly misinformation. It's constantly just kind of conditioning us to accept mediocre results. It's like we have to accept the job that Joe Biden is doing for the economy right now because you know, the goalposts are getting moved. Well, guys, you know, these are the new parameters for what life's going to look like now. You know, so get used to it. It's like, nah, I'm not going to get used to it. I'm going to remember the good old days, and we're going to get back to that.
Yeah, brother. Like, you're speaking to my heart too, man, because it's so sickening what happened in Maricopa County. I don't even live there. I have friends that live there. I watched that as well very closely. It's very sickening what happened there. It's very sickening kind of the way that they manipulated information to look like the COVID and the vaccine and the masks were all legitimate and what they were saying was legitimate. But when you did background researches on this stuff, and they were very good medical researchers who went out, people who were doing this for 20 years and disproved masks' efficacy within the first like 4 weeks of them telling people to put on a mask, but nobody wanted to listen to that. So it's very, I mean, you're speaking to my heart right now. And the fact that people are being manipulated through, like, this is where I really wanted to dive in with you, because the celebrity culture, the people today are being taught, and you hit the nail on the head, is that like they're being taught that the celebrities are on a pedestal, and if they're doing something, I'm supposed to do it too. And that's how people are being manipulated. How do you see that playing out in the future? Because right now we're seeing, this last couple of years has been probably the worst I've seen celebrities and artists weaponized in the favor of a political misinformation narrative.
Well, there's two things. They're trying to take away the voices of first of all, strong males, because that's what always leads the rebellion if it ever gets to that point, right? Strong males lead the rebellion and have the support of amazing, strong females right behind them. You know, family cohesiveness and people coming together is something they're trying to disband, because that's where power comes from. Power comes from unity, families, communities. That's why there's such an attack on free speech. The problem with the elites is, and the celebrities, is they don't have to deal with any of these problems that we have to deal with on a regular basis, right? Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't care if eggs are $10.99 a carton. He doesn't care if gas is $7 a gallon, buy a Tesla or whatever car he wants. You know, the celebrities aren't speaking for the civilians. The civilians are the ones that got to pay the bills. The civilians are one that got to go to work 50, 60 hours a week just to make, you know, ends meet. It's like no one wants to work their whole life away and have no savings. And that's what's happening, right? They're making houses unaffordable for the average American person. They're not lending money to the average American person. The average American person is spending $100 to fill their gas tank up and then making $100 that day at work. So it's there's a lot of issues. And then you have these celebrities who are up there telling everyone to do and telling everyone what they should do with their lives. And these people are worth $30, $40 million. They have none of the problems that we have. They don't have to deal with the crime in the cities. They don't have to deal with anything. They live these plush lifestyles. But these are the people that they're giving free speech to, and they're not shutting down the celebrities that are following their narrative. What they're busy shutting down is all of us connecting to each other. They do not want normal Americans, normal civilians. They don't want the American people talking to each other about what's going on. They don't want the American people grieving about their problems. They don't want the American people connecting on every level and uniting on every level to talk about the true issues, because what will happen in history when that happens is you start tarring feathering the government. You start tarring feathering the people that are running you into this hole that you're in, right? We're going into a massive economic recession here, and we're giving $1 trillion to Ukraine for a war, you know? But these same people 3 years ago were saying war is bad. Oh, anything to avoid a war. And now here we are right in a war. All of our money's going to this war. My taxes are getting raised. Your taxes are getting raised. Like, we already are all having a problem saving money. And now we're going to pay more towards some of these ridiculous spending habits of these people that are manipulating the stock market for their own benefit. Politicians go into these situations worth $100,000, $200,000, whatever their base pay is, and they all leave worth $10, $20 million. Presidents go in there worth $1 million. They leave $400 million richer. You know, follow the money, do the math. All the while, their main agenda is to use media, to use social media, to use narratives to divide the American people into two different sports teams, right? We're Democrat or Republican. The reality is, it's we the people versus them. They're the ones that are constantly turning their back on us, the people, right? I just can't understand how some people are willing to accept what's happening. And a lot of people's argument will be, well, it's better than the last guy. Oh, I hate Trump so bad that I'll accept what's going on with this current administration. But it's like, presidents come and go. Let's talk about history. Right. Let's talk about history. Don't worry about the last guy. Let's stretch it out to history. Historically, are we in a good place right now? We're not.
No, man, that's beautifully said. Yeah. And that is the crux of the problem, is I believe that, obviously we all, regardless of what side of the fence you are politically, we all have more in common than we have not in common. And the fact that the average person right now, especially over the last couple of years, has allowed the politicians to weaponize their own minds against them and against the people they love is just an absolute insanity to me. And like you said, man, the fact that they're continually fracturing us so we can't unite because that keeps them in power, that's where we just really lose. We're really losing society. And in your op-ed, you refer to some of these things. You kind of allude to some of this stuff, but you take the focus of like these male role models, because you said it too, is that like men lead rebellions, right? And for everybody out there listening, go look historically. There's not a massive woman like leading rebellion. It is done by men. That's just the nature of history. So we're not speaking in any falsehoods here. So when men, strong men, stand up and they keep that uprising to be the powers against the tyranny or the authoritative regime, that is where powerful men seen and their witness. And you in your op-ed annotated that, like, you know, we're seeing this deterioration of strong men as men, male role models in this kind of sphere of artists and celebrities and athletes and stuff like that. And I wanted to dive into that a little bit, because what you're seeing today, is that agenda to then for effeminate boys growing up, or believe the agenda is behind that?
No, it's all by design. It's by design to make sure that no one refuses. No one. Say one day in the future, somebody's doing something that you know an official doesn't like. You know, they roll up to them, whether it's a man or a woman, they start beating them down. What's everyone going to do? They're going to sit back and watch. There's going to be no strong figure to step in and oppose it or challenge it, because we're all being conditioned to fear to do that. We're being conditioned to be afraid. We're being conditioned to sit back and be watchers instead of vocalizing or acting. We're being conditioned to put away our our ability to protect and to lead, and we're almost like hiding. And you know what, just to touch on women and men, you know, no man is at his strongest form without a strong woman. So we become the men we are. We have the passion that we have to fight, to stand up for things due to the women in our lives. You know, that's what makes us stronger. That's what makes us a really, really powerful leader of a man, right? You don't have that without an amazing woman behind you. So obviously, that's one of the driving forces, our families. And the bottom line is, I think that the world needs to know that there's strong males out here left. The world needs to know that there's a resistance. The world needs to know that we won't just accept being stomped on at every turn. You know, I'm disappointed. How does it feel to know that you just have to watch another election being stolen? You got to watch your taxes being raised. You got to watch mandates being forced on. You got to watch. That's just right now. What happens in 10 years when they're storming through our communities? What happens? You know, we've got to be aware of the possibilities. You've got to look around at the world and see how every other country operates, that we are the last of we are the free world. We are the last of the Mohicans here. We are, you know, I think we take for granted our freedom. We take for granted all the rights we have, because in other countries, they do not have these rights. There are some great countries out there. I think people are fleeing to some of these countries more than ever, because we are not the freest like we once were, right? They're saying that there's a list of 5 to 10 other countries that now live freer than we do, which is insane, you know? But with that said, there are also places like China that exists, North Korea that exists, like Russia that exists. It's like, is that what we want? Is that what we want coming over here? Absolutely not. And you know what, at the end of the day, I'm so proud of the people and the civilians of China for standing up to the Communist Party right now. You know, I'm afraid for them a little bit, because they're a very aggressive regime, but somebody has to do this, right? Right. One of the dreams in my lifetime that I'd love to see is the people of China be liberated and become free and be able to live the type of life that we've been blessed to live for so many years. And the last thing that I want is that coming over here. So is that something that I'm willing to, right now I'm using my voice and I'm doing what I can to start right. speaking. And if it continues to get worse, then the strong men, you, myself, the people in my community, we might have to figure out what the next step is if this attack continues on our children or on our families.
Yeah, and very well said, because absolutely right now, if you look happening in China, we're talking December of 2022. If you look at what's going on in China right now, it is absolutely atrocious. The fact that the way the government is treating their own people, and the people are uprising, which is beautiful, but it's going to come with a high cost for them, because they've been put into this position with the communist regime. So what you said is absolutely true. We don't want that coming over here. We wish the best for them to hopefully, you know, break the chains of that. But coming back here, and we see the way that, I mean, the trajectory is that obviously the people in charge right now want to go to that direction. They're weaponizing the celebrities in a way that's influencing that. They're manipulating the young children right now. There's kind of this generation that is young enough to stand up, and this is us, young enough to stand up, but old enough to know better about what's going on, right? Like, we fall into this like sweet spot. And for us, you're using your platform, obviously, well-known artist, well-known singer, you're using your platform to stand up and be vocal about this. You guys got canceled because you guys weren't willing to follow the narrative years ago. You stood up against that. What can we tell other guys out there to do to start being that, you know, role model, even maybe just in a small way in their own communities? Like, how can we give them permission and give them, not that they need it, but guys kind of sometimes need it. How can we give them a little bit of that? Hey, bro, we're sitting here side by side with you. Here's some things that might be an option for us to peep a little more in your own community.
Well, I think what we're doing is letting them know that we're here, which is important. They don't feel alone. They've got to be themselves and that they can't be afraid to speak out about how they feel. They've got to not be ashamed to be a strong male in a community, right? Because when the going gets tough, they may be the one that people run to. So I think everything starts with community. I think as long as you're strong within your community, that's the beginning. As long as you're strong within building whether it's a you know, church family, church friends, I think God is the number one priority for a strong male, because that you know, it helps you kind of follow your path of what you know you're supposed to do, right? It's God, family. Those are the two things that drive me to make sure that I'm consistently, speaking out about these things, because I don't want to see the world go in more of a satanic, family-less direction. That's not the direction that I want my kids to be raised in. That's not the society I want them to be a part of. So I want those males to know that we're here. There's a lot of us out here that we are aware of what's going on. We are prepared. We are speaking about it. We are talking to our communities about it. We aren't afraid to say what we're thinking and have people say things backlashing. You know, I'll make a Twitter post, people hate on me, and I'm like, have a good day. You know, I hope you learned something. Can't be afraid. And at the end of the day, I think another important thing to note is the United States of America is so big that it's impossible for a government or these officials to keep tabs on everything you're doing. If you're really feeling the pressure, and if things ever start really getting so bad that we're that concerned, you can exile yourself from society. I think the cities are going to be where the targets are. The cities are going to be what's kind of taken over and run almost like that movie. What's that movie? V for Vendetta. It's going to be in the cities.
Oh, yeah.
We could always go out, have our own water source, have our own chickens, find a farm in Montana, in Idaho, in South Dakota, in Arizona. You can go out into the middle of nowhere. You can take yourself out of society and you can live a happy life that way. And that's what may have to happen in 10 years. In 10 years, if we do not stop this squeeze that's happening, and we do not stop this constant attack on our freedoms, on our free speech, they're going after guns. They're going after everything. Historically, whenever a government gets your guns, what follows is not a good thing. It's usually some form of massacre, takeover.
Oh, yeah.
We're blind to this, right? And I understand that sometimes crazy people get a hold of guns, but that's also been happening since the beginning of time. So the good news is if you're obsessing over this and government is ruining your life and all this is ruining your life, go to a farm in the outskirts, get a water source, make that your life goal if you can't afford it yet, and get off the grid. That's still possible. But if you're here in your communities, you got to speak out. You got to talk. You got to take care of each other. You got to look after each other. That's another thing that I think is a problem too. They're squeezing humans to being homeless. They're squeezing humans to have nothing, right? Some people are going to work. They still live in their cars. This is an absolute squeeze on the lower and middle class right now. And as communities, we can't take our eyes off of our, you know, fellow civilians that are dealing with this. We've got to help in your community. You've got to help the homeless. You've got to help people that are having a tough time. It starts with us. We can't just sit back and say, oh, well, the government's going to help them. That's not our job. The government is the one that put them in that position for the most part. You know, not everyone in the government's bad. There's a few good seeds in there that are trying to help people and the people of America. But for the most part, it starts with us. We are the answer. The people are the answer. You see someone that's homeless that needs help, you got to help them out. We got to stay within our communities, keep them strong. And that's going to be the answer to this.
Yeah. And, you know, that couldn't be a more timely comment, especially with the fact that we're going to see a bigger downturn in our economy coming soon. And not to be all doom and gloom, but that's the fact and the economic prediction right now. So it's like, yeah, if you have the means and the ability to help, like, you should be out there standing up and helping, and especially as strong men, we should be getting out there and showing people that. And like you said, standing up in our communities, you can't be scared to be ostracized. You can't be scared to have somebody make a mean tweet about you or make a freaking comment on your post about you. Like, who gives a shit? That doesn't matter at all. What matters is the fact that people see you doing what you're doing, because there's plenty. I mean, Jordan Peterson, I love Jordan Peterson. That guy has been lambasted by the media, but you look at everything he's said and everything he's done, he's let men know that there's more like him that have a platform that are willing to stand up for what's right. You know, you got him, you got some of these other people like JP Sears, who he's gotten really big in his own right. Joe Rogan, he's pretty middle of the road, but a lot of his stuff is like, hey, this is what's going on right now is very offensive to like society and how we want to live as human beings. And he gets criticized too, but you know what? You got to be willing to stand up and say those things and be willing to take the criticized, so then you can actually let people know, hey, you're not the only one, you're not alone. So I love that you put that out there. So as we're kind of like winding down here, you guys have a new single called New Era, which is absolutely a phenomenal song. I really mean so good. Was that kind of written in the vein of what we're talking about right now?
Of course. It was written to kind of, you know, hopefully unite people that are feeling the same way we're feeling. I was hoping it to be an anthem, written to be an anthem for anybody that feels that way, right? And to break these chains that we have. Understand that we are free, we're living the dream. You know, all these lyrics that came up, yeah, I'm speaking to the people who feel this way. And another thing that I wrote the song for is to unite people. We're constantly arguing over these micro topics that everyone thinks, right? Everyone thinks, oh, if you're a Republican, you don't like gay people. Oh, if you're a Republican, you're racist. So they've got us programmed to be attached to these type of words when it's absolutely untrue. I come from such a culturally diverse upbringing that none of that phases me. I love everyone, but they've made these topics to divide us because they're so afraid of the people sticking together. They're so afraid of us all having similar views. You know, like they make these arguments at every turn. People are arguing over gas cars versus electric cars, abortion, non-abortion. Look, it goes both ways. If you want to wear a mask or you don't want to wear a mask, that's your American right. If you want to drive an electric car versus a gas car, that's your American right. We've got to stop judging both sides. We've got to come together, understand that some of us have different views, and we've got to focus on the major topics that's happening. Economically, there's major topics happening economically. You know, people, wages haven't grown barely over a course of some period of time, but the inflation of homes, of vehicles, of gases, of the things that we need to live on our society, it's skyrocketed 40, 50%. How can that happen? Well, it happened because we're busy paying attention to these micro topics at every turn. We're busy arguing. There are people out there who are arguing over abortion that never had an abortion. They're never going to get an abortion, but their whole vote is based on this policy. And it's like, no, how many times a week are you grabbing groceries? How many times a week are you getting gas? How many times are you paying your power bill per year? Let's focus on the real issues here and stop arguing over these micro topics that cause us division. You know, they've made it so, oh, if you're a patriot, you love America, you must be against anyone that wants to get an abortion. It's like, no, look, I'm a man of God, so obviously I have beliefs, but if someone has to go through that, there's no judgment here. We're in America. It's everyone's choice to go through the life that they navigate, right? No one really helps me navigate my life. I'm not going to go micro navigate anyone else's life. That's our jobs. We can't go micro navigating everyone's lives. We can't be divided at every turn over these micro topics when the major topics are what we should all be focusing on together as a collective unit. Democrats and Republicans have to stop arguing over micro topics like one sports team versus the other, and we have to come together that we just like the whole sport of the world, and we have to start focusing on the major topics that are affecting both parties instead of getting into these little spatters over whether you like an electric car or a gas car more. It's like, I don't care. Either way, we're both paying the piper. The electric car drivers are paying their 30% increase on the energy that the government just did, and the gas guys are paying $6 a gallon for gas. Both of us got hoodwinked.
So true. It's so true. I couldn't have said that better myself, man. That is where I think the epitome of all this lies, is that we need to start finding more ways of uniting against the bigger things that are impacting our day-to-day lives, as opposed to these, you know, like you put it, these micro arguments that really have no impact or relatively low impact. They're just trying to show you a shiny thing while they do some other bullshit over here, like you said, that's hoodwinking everybody, right? So it's like, it doesn't even matter. But I think that's a beautiful way of putting it. And I love that you wrote the song to actually epitomize like what that looks like, uniting together, creating that anthem for people to say, hey, fuck all this bullshit. Let's start getting together and actually looking at each other as human beings again, and start respecting one another for our differences as much as for our commonalities, right?
Of course. And you got to notice the tricks that these people play. The media is very, very involved, right? So what's everyone talking about right now? Canceling. Oh, yeah. Everyone's talking about Balenciaga this, Balenciaga that, all the while Arizona elections being stolen, right? In 2020, everyone's talking about Gabby Petito. It's like, the girl was murdered by our boyfriend, but everyone's talking about it. What's going on during that period of time? They're probably raising some tax on us, right? There's these distraction mechanisms that they get everyone to focus on, talk about, discuss, and then behind the scenes, they do something maniacal to the American people, whether that's pushing an election in a direction they want, raising some form of tax on us when we're already overtaxed. There's always something behind it, right? Oh, we don't want everyone talking about the $7 a gallon gas prices or the 30% energy increase on home power and energy. What can we get people to talk about? Well, let's get them to talk about Kanye West, right? We need them to focus on something else. We don't want them looking in our direction. So let's deflect it over into another direction as everything tumbles. We're about to go into the biggest economic recession in quite some time. It's happening. It's already underway. Historically, the numbers line up to say we're already 3 to 4 months in a recession, and then it's going to continue to go down. Now, some people will be able to take advantage of this. If you're financially savvy, you'll be able to increase your wealth through this process. It may take longer than you would hope, because I think that this administration is that maniacal. They may wait 5 years to bump the stock market back up to really shake everyone out who's not involved in insider trading. But more people should be able to purchase homes here during this recession. More people should be able to get deals on things during this recession. It's the people that can stay afloat, rise above this, that are going to come out on the other side. And there is going to be a whole sector of people that fall off the cliff. And we need to be there to help those people when that happens. We need to be charitable. We need to be gracious. We need to be very selfless when this happens. When this recession comes, the shakeout happens, and people fall off the raft, we can't let them drown.
Yeah. We're winding down here, but I have a question to that is, do you think they are actually, because you said they're maniacal. And I believe the same thing. This administration is very maniacal. They're very calculated in what they're doing. It's very purposeful. And so do you think they're having this take place so they can create more of a lower income grouping that has to be reliant on government?
Of course, that's the direction, right? They've spent a lot of, this has been a long play, guys. If we want to get into the whole can of worms, from the 50s or 60s on, we've been being programmed through media, through television, fall in. They've been depopulating us by approving foods that should not be consumed. They've been putting Teflon on our pans. They do all these little moves, these micro moves. And of course, I think they're manipulating the financial market to create an entire cratering of the middle and lower class right now to become, grateful to get $1,000 a month check from them. All the while it takes $6,000-$7,000 a month to live. It takes $7,000 to live a good life. We'll give you $1,000. You can live in a tent on the street. It's like, or look into a trailer park. It's like, oh, thanks. But again, they're so greedy that some things, if you're on a certain side of things, their greed goes against them. If you can stay afloat during this whole situation, if you can hang tough, I don't know the timeline. It could be 1 year. It could be next month. It could be 3 years. It could be 4 years. If you can hang tough, at some point, they always want to dip their hand back into the pot. So they crank up big techs. Evaluations, they crank up, and then they clear the pot for themselves. That's how some of these companies are worth $26 trillion. It's because they play this game over and over and over again. They're like a slot machine, taking everyone's money. You don't know when it's going to happen, and then it's like jackpot. So the jackpot will come, and if you're around when the jackpot comes, you will change your family's life. You will be able to be the next generation getting more real estate, getting more stocks and bonds, getting more. You will be able to be in the mix and live this better life. But if you're someone right now that's struggling to fill up your tank, struggling to pay your rent, struggling to buy your groceries for your family, you're going to get shaken out right now. And again, it's very, very important that in community, all the people that are doing well, all the people that are blessed, all the people that are fortunate, we've got to step up and make sure that we are a life raft, or we show some love and support to the people that are really, really in need. So it's going to be the American people that bail out the American people. And hopefully after we do that, we can start focusing on helping all over the world, because there's outside of our own country need to help. We're sending all this aid to Ukraine. Well, how about liberating the people in China? How about we liberate the people in Ukraine? How about we get rid of all the human slaves in the world right now, because no one should live their life like that. So there's a lot that has to be fixed in this world. I think the things that are trying to be fixed right now are not the right focus, not the right priority. I actually think they're working on the destruction of America.
Oh man, this is, you and I could go forever, dude. Next time I'm in Arizona, we're going to go have a drink together and hang out, because this is a really good conversation. But I want to make sure that I'm mindful of your time. So as we kind of close down here, since you guys are independent, let everybody know where they can find you, how they can best support Adelita's Way, support you guys on the road, support what you guys got going on. And we'll link all this in the show notes as well, but just let everybody know where to become loyal followers, brother.
At Adelita's Way, everywhere. Stream us, spread the word. Word of mouth is so powerful. We tour the whole country once every year, so come out and check a live show out. Buy a t-shirt. We've got it all. We've got online stores. We've got Instagram, Adelita's Way, Facebook, Adelita's Way, YouTube, Adelita's Way. Subscribe to our YouTube page. And we're very vocal and we're very, very active with our fans. So if you follow us, you'll be able to be connected to us and have up to date on everything we're doing.
So appreciate you so much, Rick. Your last question before we hop off is, what does the art of masculinity mean to you?
Well, the art of masculinity, it's an art finding the strength within yourself, and you know, it's an art to conquer fear, and it's an art to take on fear. You know, if you're not afraid of something, there's no accomplishment in conquering it. So sometimes that fear is a good thing, but you got to take it on. You got to, you got to dig deep within yourself, find that that masculinity, find that ability to not be fearful, being strong and stepping up to the challenge. You know, nobody wants to do something that's difficult. Nobody wants to dive into freezing water with sharks to save someone drowning. But sometimes you got to just dig deep and pull out the man and the masculinity in yourself and take on a challenge. So, you know, the art of masculinity is really understanding that fear is something that is a challenge. When you conquer fear, that's something that's you can be accomplished after you get it done, right? Nothing great comes without having to take on some form of very difficult challenge. So the art of masculinity is challenging yourself. It's a very difficult challenge, digging deep within yourself to find that strength to persevere.
I love that, brother. Appreciate that. Well, thank you so much, Rick, for being on here. And to everybody listening, as always, remember to drop the ego and stay humble. Till next time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.